WBAI.org. You'd be helping to ensure the stability and growth of this historic listener-sponsored radio station. With details, please email Bertol at WBAI.org. That's B-E-R-T-H-O-L-D, Bertol at WBAI.org, with Grant Ryder in the subject heading. Many thanks. Many, many thanks. This is listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was The Minefield, heard Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Stay tuned for an expanded edition of Randy Credico's Live on the Fly coming up.
The Iraq War famously is a result of lies. Wars in Somalia are a result of lies. The Second World War and the German invasion of Poland was a result of carefully constructed lies. That is war by media. Let us ask ourselves, of the complicit media, which is the majority of the mainstream press? What is the average death count attributed to each journalist?
Okay, it's Randy Credico here, Randy Credico Live on the Fly here in New York City. Day one of the Julian Assange appeal. We have a wonderful show today. It is an expanded version of Randy Credico Live on the Fly. We have a lot of guests on today. We had a wonderful show the other day, by the way. I'm sorry that many of you were unable to show up, but the place on paper was completely jammed, sold out, standing room only, at least until the show started. Hi, Reggie. Good afternoon. You know, we have a long show today, and we have two wonderful guests. We're going to go across the pond and introduce our first guest, and that is, he was just here a couple of weeks ago, and that is Afshin Ratanzi, who is the host of my favorite TV show in the world, and that is Going Underground, which is on every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday on RT. Welcome, Afshin.
Hey there, Randy.
Oh, yeah, good. We can hear you very well over there. And a gentleman who you know very well, and he doesn't really need an introduction, so I'm not going to give him one because I lost 2 minutes already at the very start, the great Roger Waters. Roger, do we have you? Hello.
Just kidding.
I didn't hear it.
Randy.
Hello. We have.
Kidding.
Do you two guys know each other?
Never met this guy.
Yeah,
no.
Of course we do.
That's Paul Robeson. You introduced Paul Robeson at the recent Assange gig you did, Randy.
Well, you know, Afshin, you're a student of U.S. history and you're very culturally attuned to U.S. history and U.S. music and everything U.S., more than most Americans that I know, except for Roger. So wouldn't you say Roger fits in that category, his activism? I mean, how many...
Absolutely. Absolutely. He risked so much more than probably we all know for causes like free speech, freedom of the press, and marginalized peoples all over the world, literally all over the world.
Well, I know one thing. He's a big fan of yours because we talk about it. Roger, you liked RT and you like Afshin's show.
I love RT and I adore Afshin, obviously. And thank you for those few kind words. I'm lying down. I try to figure out how I could pat myself on the back without getting up. No, I'm going to fuck it. I'm going to forget it. I'm not going to. I'm just going to lie here and listen to you two chatting.
No. You're taking over. I'm actually going to – you're the co-pilot now, and I wanted you to ask Afshin what happened today in London.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's actually been a terrible, terrible day, and it's terrible for Julian Assange's friends, obviously, but, I mean, it's kind of difficult to even appreciate what his children is partner, his closest friends must be going through. I know that Joe Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland was testifying in Washington today. I don't think he mentioned Julian Assange once, the most famous publisher and journalist in the world. This time, and I monitored proceedings because we got a remote link to it, despite Twitter censorship. Any of your listeners, if you look up Assange and another word on Twitter, you'll see that instead of the word Assange, it picks up the word arrested. What is going on with Twitter? Is it censoring the name Assange? Anyway, we finally got into the remote link. And interestingly, this time, it's been commented by others, Michael Isikoff from Yahoo News, who did that story about 30 unnamed officials from the U.S. military industrial complex saying that Assange could have been kidnapped or killed here in London. He tuned in. The Guardian tuned in. What is that newspaper, The Guardian? WikiLeaks' old partner that then chose to defame Julian Assange in the most horrific betrayal that they could. So more mainstream media actually bothering to look. But I got to tell you, I don't know what it's like in New York or on the East Coast, but certainly in Britain, they were more interested in the so-called Facebook whistleblower, keen to censor Facebook than it wasn't even in the headlines. Julian Assange's hearing, which we must remind the viewers, is the Joe Biden administration appealing against a decision of a British court not to extradite Julian Assange to a Virginia hearing under the Espionage Act that could see him die in a USA jail.
Roger, did you see any coverage in the last 24 hours of this, you know, very important case, is what is really a show trial? Have you seen any coverage?
What a surprise. I've been searching for it everywhere. And what a strange thing it is. I wonder what's going wrong. No, this is why I'm looking forward to hear what I'm lying here with my stomach in a complete knot, because Afshin said, terrible day for everybody who loves Julian Assange or cares for him or cares about free speech and all the rest. But he didn't tell us what happened. What happened today?
Basically, the Crown Prosecution Service here, acting for the Joe Biden administration and Merrick Garland and your Justice Department over there, he tried to use Julian Assange's partner and his children against him to get the decision for him not to be extradited to the USA against him. And we got to see a few shots of Julian Assange in a room. We could see a guard behind him. There was a sort of blue room. He looked terrible. I mean, his head was in his hands. He walked out quite soon after he arrived. He wasn't there initially. He appeared in silence. Someone said he hadn't been able to allowed to attend, but I think it was ill health. Anyone who knows Julian Assange will be heartbroken by how he looked. The strange rules of court reporting here, and I know you've had Craig Murray on your show, who's now in jail. Strange rules here mean that I'm not able to give you a photograph or send you video of Julian Assange. I would have to draw a cartoon of him for it to be legal in this country, for you to see the most famous journalist in the world look as tortured as the United Nations claims he is. They tried to overturn evidence about mental illness and torture that has been confirmed by the UN by saying there are good, effectively, there are good asylums that he can be taken to from any supermax prison he might be sent to were he to be taken from this country to your country.
You know, I was following James Dolman, who's a court reporter, and the last thing he posted was that what's his name, Lewis, the Crown Prosecutor, James Lewis, said that the U.S. has guaranteed that the time that he has spent at Belmore's would be taken off of his prison time if he's convicted. So he'd go from 170 years down to 168, basically, is what they're saying. I mean, what a ludicrous thing to say. And let me ask you, did you see the judges at all, faces?
It was a really poor camera shot. There was two camera shots of it. I know that our someone who appears on your show and a good friend of Roger's, John Pilger, tweeted out that he couldn't understand how James Lewis QC, Queen's Counselor, sleeps at night as he read out. I mean, things like mental health is not physical health. So there's another reason why he can be taken away. And we must remember, this is all following a British decision, which actually surprised some, that said he'll die if he goes to the United States. Your prison industrial complex is not safe. Yeah. For people to be incarcerated in.
Roger, you've been involved in this case for a long time, although you have not visited Assange, but you have been one of his most vocal supporters. What kicked off your support of Assange? When did you actually get involved?
Well, you know, back in 2006, 7, first of all, those USM murdered those two Reuters journalists and those other civilians and tried to kill those children in that van in that part of Baghdad, whatever, what has come to be known as the collateral murder video. And Chelsea Manning, to her eternal credit, passed the videos on to WikiLeaks, who, along with the New York Times and the Manchester Guardian and one or two other mainstream media outlets, published them. So all of those people published film of American war crimes, and that is why they're hounding Julian Assange, they hope, to his death. That is why they are, because he reported war crimes, not for all the other stuff that he reported, which was faintly embarrassing to all sorts of governments all over the world, doing his job correctly as the fourth estate to give we, the people, the information that we need in order to be part of a democratic society. It's not for that. It's because somewhere they're scared that they may be held accountable for the terrible criminals that they are, okay, that George W. Bush is, that Rumsfeld was. I'm glad there were ladies from Code Pink from through Rumsfeld's final years shouting at him every time he went out in public, war criminal, what, because he was, and they all are. So I know I'm rambling.
Well,
I'm
no, you're not. Rambling. Well,
I'm telling you how I got into it.
Yes.
Well, I saw that collateral damage footage, and it was just before I went on a worldwide tour of my piece, The Wall, which started in 2010. So I put the film into the show. It's in a song called Run Like Hell in the middle of The Wall, as anybody, lots of people know that already. And everywhere we performed that footage, I published it too. I published that footage everywhere I went, at about 120 decibels in on a 150-foot wide screen in the middle of the thing. So why aren't I in prison? And why aren't the publishers of the Guardian newspaper and the publishers of the New York Times, why single out Julian? I'll tell you why. Because Julian is effective. And Julian was the brave man who figured out the whole WikiLeaks idea and the way to use the internet in order to get this desperately important, needed information that our governments are peopled by and run by deeply corrupt sociopaths who are murdering innocent people all over the globe. They desperately, ever since he did it, tried to silence him, and they're still doing it. And unfortunately, because of people like Vanessa Beretzer, the disgusting woman magistrate in London, and James Lewis, who should have QC ripped from his sleeve or wherever they wear it, because they are not interested in the application of the rule of law. They're not interested in justice. They're not interested in habeas corpus. They're not interested in any of the things that we, the people of the world, all of us, desperately need in order to stop those in power from destroying the fragile planet upon which we live. The whole thing, they're destroying it as hard as they can. Okay. So where did I start? You asked me why I did. So I put it in the show, and we did it for 3 years all over the world. And inevitably, I've started following the story, and I've followed it ever since. And I'm more and more disgusted by the way the powers that be behave with every second that passes. And the fact that that moron, Boris Johnson, hasn't freed Julian Assange from Belmarsh. What is the man doing in a high-security jail? He's committed no crime. One, a bail infringement, when they were trying to railroad him. And he was quite right to commit that single crime, because he spotted that they were trying to get him to Sweden so that Sweden would extradite him to the United States so that they could kill him. It's disgusting beyond all measure. What flabbergasts me is that notwithstanding the great work, Randy, that you do and that Russia Today does and that Action does and that many, many other concerned people do, there are not millions of people in the street demanding that this farce stop. It also, I nearly said it staggers me that Blinken and Merrick Garland and Joe Biden and the rest of them, the people who are apparently in power in the United States at the moment, haven't said, hang on, stop. This is insane. And also deeply criminal. So I'll stop now, because that's a rather long answer to a very short question. But my fucking heart is breaking. And also, my world is being destroyed. My planet, I live here as well. And they are destroying this planet. And part of the destruction of this planet is to deny we, the people, access to the information that we need to express our voices in the debate as to do we want to live or not. Sorry.
We are talking with Roger Waters and the host of Going Underground, Afshin Ratanzi. Afshin, let me ask you, you've interviewed Julian Assange many times over the last 7 or 8 years. You've gotten to know him. You've seen him when he was at his sharpest. What kind of journalist, to you, as a journalist for the last 30 years, does he represent in the world of journalism?
He's an amazing intellect. As Roger was saying, his idea of being able to formulate an invention to be able to whistleblow on crimes that, again, as Roger says, potentially will destroy the Earth, because don't forget, WikiLeaks leaked not only information about manipulation of your election, in effect, by Hillary Clinton. It also revealed so much about the military-industrial complex, assassinations, war crimes, but also corporate misdemeanors. And as Roger said, everyone is liable. Everyone should be listening to this. And the fact is, while Roger and I have been trying to cover this gross travesty of justice, at last, every major free speech and human rights organization in the world, every major one, was today, despite the media silence, the so-called mainstream media silence, has been saying what you're saying, Randy. They want him freed. And yet the media is not reflecting what all these, Amnesty International, some of these human rights groups, you know, over the years, people have accused them of being captured by elements of the security state in this country and in the USA. They've all come round. They're all on our side, as it were, on the side of free speech. And yet the so-called mainstream media is still trying to cover it up. And in a sense, Julian Assange, who not only invented the idea of an internet way of doing journalism that will really give power to the people through information, he foresaw the dangers this will pose for elite power. He foresaw, I think some people at WikiLeaks never took him seriously, frankly. I mean, WikiLeaks is an organization, obviously, suffering without him greatly. You know, we haven't seen many leaks very recently from the WikiLeaks website. I'm not sure they've necessarily taken the right path on trying to campaign for Julian Assange's freedom. But I know that some of them, they didn't take it seriously. But Julian Assange always did. He not only invented methods of being able to give information to people from the global south and the epicenters of elite power, he also understood what the dangers were to him personally. And people didn't believe him. So-called mainstream media journalists went, why don't you just leave the Ecuadorian embassy and walk out on the street? Why don't you just do this? And he knew. He knew that, say, that collateral murder video, which went around the world showing visually the murder by U.S. soldiers as just an emblem of the wars in, well, we've now seen them in Libya, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and so many more in Latin America and Africa. he knew what revealing that meant, and which is why Mike Pompeo, and which is why, of course, the case should be thrown out completely by Vanessa Bereitzer, given that the former U.S. Secretary of State said, we will consider de facto Julian Assange as a non-state hostile actor, and all his lawyers were being bugged by a CIA cutout.
We're talking with Afshin Ratansi. That's a very good point. Can you two... we have to take a news break here. Can I keep you guys both on through the news break and come back on the other side for a little bit longer? Can you agree to that? Because this is such, it's going by so quickly, and we start a little late.
Sure, I'm okay with that.
Are you okay with that, Roger?
Yeah, of course I'm
okay.
Okay,
we're going to go to a news break. I'm Randy Credico, Critico Live on the Fly here on 99.5 FM Free Speech Radio in New York City, WBAI, WBAI.org. We're going to go to the news, the national news out of D.C., and we'll be right back in a few minutes. All right, don't go anywhere, folks, and you too, please don't leave.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. Major issues remain unresolved as Democrats seek a deal on President Biden's massive domestic spending bill before he leaves for Europe tomorrow. Policy issues from paid family leave to an expansion of Medicare and prescription drug price negotiation continue to divide progressives and moderates with no clear resolution in sight. Several of Biden's campaign promises have already been cut from the plan, such as providing free community college and creating a clean electricity standard with penalties for utilities that don't comply. Other programs that were initially going to be permanent will be instead expire in a year or two, such as the expanded child tax credit. Congressional lawmakers investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection are expected to seek testimony from John Eastman, the lawyer who spearheaded Trump's legal strategy to overturn the 2020 election. Committee Chair Benny Thompson told the Washington Post Tuesday that he anticipated issuing a subpoena for Eastman, but a congressional aide told Politico Eastman could choose to cooperate voluntarily. Following Trump's election defeat, Eastman developed a legal strategy that involved asking the Supreme Court to toss out electoral votes from four key states, and later attempted to persuade then-Vice President Mike Pence to toss out the election results himself. Eastman also spoke at the rally directly preceding the January 6th riot. In a sharp rebuke to Howard University student leaders who have been leading a student protest at the university into a third week by occupying a school building, University President Wayne Frederick said students can continue to protest, but the occupation of the Blackburn Center must end, Frederick said in a statement Tuesday. Cold weather and rain are approaching, and the tents outside the Blackburn Center, which students have transformed into a home. Several days before Blackburn hashtag takeover began, students were active online with complaints of mold, health issues, and limited resources. Protesters insist that they will only talk to Frederick and the university's board of trustees. Our demands are not demanding, a student organizer said. We do not believe that we are asking for much when we ask to have a conversation with the president. Dr. Deborah Bix, former President Trump's coronavirus coordinator, told lawmakers that more than 130,000 lives could have been saved in the United States if the Trump administration had quickly implemented effective public health measures. Bix said the White House was too distracted by the election and ignored recommendations to slow down the pandemic. A Texas state lawmaker has launched an investigation into the kinds of books found in Texas school libraries, seeking information on books that pertain to race or sexuality. Republican Representative Matt Krause, who is running for state attorney general, released a list of 850 book titles and asked districts to report how many copies are in their possession. Titles include Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates and Isabel Wilkerson's Caste, as well as books on gender and sexuality. Currently in Washington, it's sunny and 68 degrees. In New York, it's cloudy and 61. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
Anton Dvorak, Humoresque. I'm Randy Credico, Randy Credico, live on the fly on 99.5 FM in New York City. This is a special extended version of Live on the Fly. Today is the first day of the show trial appeal hearing by the Biden administration against Julian Assange, or against the ruling that would allow Julian Assange to walk free. We're talking with Roger Waters and Afshin Ratanzi of RT's Going Underground. Welcome back, gentlemen. I got to ask you about that. Does that really annoy you, Roger, that the Biden administration has continued where the Trump administration left off, the DOJ?
Well, yeah, obviously. But I have to tell you, Randy, and I don't know if Afshin agrees, and I have a question for Afshin in a minute, but you can't take Joe Biden seriously. I mean, you just can't. And I was listening to the news and the fact that the Democrats are arguing with one another. There's an argument going on between the progressives and the, whoever the others are. And there is a progressive wing of the Democratic Party. There are five of them. They're called the Squad. They're nearly all Muslim women, and they're in Congress. And they are the only hope for the future. They're the only people who speak any sense. There is no right and left in America. It's all far right of anywhere that I would consider, even faintly acceptable. That's another story. But, oh, God, wouldn't it be wonderful if they started behaving like human beings? They can't. They have to do as they're told. Who's telling them what to do? We'll probably never know. What I want to ask Afshin is this. What did the appalling James Lewis do to try and use Stella and the children in the United States government's appeal against Beretz's mealy-mouthed refusal to allow Assange to be extradited at the end of the extradition proceedings? What did he do to use them? I don't understand.
Well, and I should just remind everyone that the British judge didn't refuse the extradition on any of the free speech grounds that any normal person supporting the U.S. Constitution would support. And I should also say this is at last a not left, not right, basic free speech issue. Tucker Carlson on Fox News is more likely to talk about free speech and Julian Assange than anything supporting the Democrat Party of the U.S. Basically, the judge had previously said that she'd, Vanessa Brace had said she had been aware of the fact that Julian Assange had fathered children. And James Lewis QC was saying, no, you know what throws all this into doubt and why he should die in the USA is because she wasn't aware that children had been fathered. These children are the reason. Having these babies are the reason why he must go and die. And that is a level of legal argument, let alone in a free speech case. I mean, how it must have upset Julian's father, Gabriel Shipton, who I think was there in the court, and you can see some videos of him. His brother Gabriel Shipton and his father John Shipton. It's difficult to even imagine. I should say, by the way, some of WikiLeaks is there. Kristin Hrafnsson, names that one has to mention, like Gavin McFadyen, who died, who was a mentor to Julian Assange. Would that he would see what was going on, that they would stoop so low to say, because he had children that the judge wasn't aware of, even if that had been the case, therefore he must die.
That all disgusts me, but they're scraping the bone on the barrel, obviously. But there's something that I really want to say, given this tiny platform and this important debate, and that is this. It is so blindingly obvious that neither Joe Biden nor Merrick Garland nor any of the American administration nor Boris Johnson nor any of the UK administration, as far as we can tell, with the exception of one or two Labour MPs, shit about human rights or free speech or the press or any of the things that they pretend to. The United States makes a huge propaganda play every day about being the bastion of liberty and freedom and caring about human rights and freedom. They couldn't care less. And they make that completely plain all the time. And this hounding of this innocent, an extremely important journalist makes that point every second that he's still under lock and key. They don't care. They didn't care about the human rights of the Reuters cameraman and journalist in Beirut who were murdered by the US government. They don't care about the human rights of any of the brown people that they murder all over the world. They certainly don't care about the human rights. It's funny that Ecuador should and that why was it the Ecuadorian embassy that Julian Assange stayed in for 8 years, took refuge in? Because Ecuador had a president, I think he's called Rafael Correa at the time, who made him an Ecuadorian citizen and gave him protection from these attacks upon him. Because Correa does believe in human rights. He actually believes in them. The current president of Ecuador doesn't. Lenin, what is that his name? I've forgotten his full name.
Lenin Moreno.
He doesn't. That's why he threw Julian Assange out of the Ecuadorian embassy, because he is in cahoots with the United States government that couldn't care less about human rights. So the fact that all the human rights organizations all over the world are now saying, you have to set this man free. The fact that that Joe Biden is ignoring them is so blindingly the only thing that he can possibly do, because Joe Biden doesn't care about your rights or my rights or anybody else's rights except his own rights and the rights of the establishment and the powers that be. And it's blindingly obvious. And yet, we let them that they do, for some reason. Today, a friend of mine is being locked up in a prison, probably in New Jersey. I'm not going to say any more about where it is, because he was a human rights lawyer. His name's Stephen Dontiger. He's a human rights lawyer who represented 30,000 indigenous rainforest dwellers in northern Ecuador and has done for the last 25 years. And he has been sued by Chevron Corporation in a private prosecution, actually by a judge, Louis A. Kaplan, who's in the pocket of Chevron Corporation, and by another judge called Loretta Preska. And they're sending him to prison for contempt of court. And he's just had his appeal refused.
Did he go to jail today? Did he actually go to jail?
He's going to jail today. The order came out. You're going to jail. Turn up at the jail today.
Yeah, I know. He said it yesterday that he was going to jail. Huh?
He's going today.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Afshin.
So anyway.
Go ahead.
What we have to understand is the judiciary in the United States and in the UK couldn't care less. God, what's up in here? It's driving me crazy. It's going ding, 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 ding. Oh, sorry. I'm going to stop again now because I'm taking up too much.
Well, you know, you just asked Afshin a question. Afshin, you're the best host in the world. Do you have a question for Mr. Waters?
Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, Lenin Moreno, before he allowed the CIA base in Ecuador, might have been excused saying, the CIA and the U.S. were threatening me with not funding us or sanctions or something, so I couldn't have health care there. One lesson, arguably, is that if you want to seek asylum, you go to a country with nuclear weapons, which is what Edward Snowden famously did with the help of Julian Assange. As for Stephen Donziger, it just shows the power of corporations. And sadly, the evidence that Roger just outlined about, with a few honorable exceptions, I think in the U.S., Rand Paul, it's the libertarian right leading it there. With a few exceptions, the evidence suggests, indeed, none of the politicians care about free speech or a free press. And that goes with the squad, too, arguably. They're not out there on every network saying that a trial in London means that anywhere in the world, whatever nationality you are, you can be extradited and face 175 years in prison for saying things that the U.S. might be embarrassed by. To ask Roger, well, I guess it relates to what we were first talking about. What is the reaction from his colleagues in the music industry, say, to all of this kind of thing, and to the activism that you carry out because you obviously so desperately care for the marginalized and the dispossessed around the world? I mean, you hear about them caring for the environment, and I do know that you have, a few, you know, celebrity friends did campaign against the appalling environmental destruction and the destruction of the indigenous peoples in Ecuador.
He's talking.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, I'm not going to single out my colleagues in the music industry because this runs right through all professions or non-professions or through all of us. Why is it that the choir doesn't swell to monumental proportions and take to the streets? The closest we've ever got global uprising against government policy was in 2003 when George Bush decided to invade Iraq, and there were 30 million maybe people all over the world took to the streets to complain about it because they, the people, knew that it was a mistake of monumental proportions that had no basis in any rational thought and certainly no basis in anything that we collectively as human beings should be doing. And, of course, they were ignored by Tony Blair and George Bush and Powell, who just died, you know, and Rumsfeld and the rest of them and Wolfowitz and the whole of the neoliberal establishment and blah. But unfortunately, they have the backing of the big corporations. And in consequence, they feel they can do anything they want. It's like these judges. The fact that Ernest Berezer and Louis A. Kaplan and Loretta Preska, in positions of power in judicial systems in countries that claim to be civilized and demonstrate a depth that is nanometers thick. There is no moral depth to their understanding of the law or what it might be about. You know, so these are the times that we live in. Why don't my fellow musicians stand up for the Palestinians or for the Ecuadorians or for each other or for the working class or for the blacks or the browns or the Hispanics or the Polish or whoever it might be who's under the jackboot at any particular? I don't know. I guess
I think it's important there what you said about corporations because, I mean, you must know, I mean, off the record, actors, musicians, they say to me they contractually have to abide by no politics in public clauses, some of them. We started talking about Paul Robeson, and we know how hunted down he was towards to his death. Nowadays, Hollywood, for instance, can actually stop actors and kill their careers, right? Obviously, Jean Seberg, they did it there when she married a black man. But talking about Palestine, we've got Mike Lee coming on The film, British film director who was nominated for Oscars and won Palme d'Ors and so on, he didn't even, he's a very pro-UN resolutions on Palestine. Even he, I detected a little bit of reticence there, even with him to talk about Palestine. I know, Roger, you got into a lot of trouble talking about your support for UN Security Council resolutions on Palestine.
No, I haven't. Saved my life, Bastian. Saves your life. When you stand up to be counted. I sat and played the piano with Randy the other, you know, for Julian actually, two nights of what keeps me alive. That saves my life. I can't believe what it would be like not to stand up and be counted. I couldn't take it. I mean, I do understand that some people find themselves in situations where if they raise their voice, they're going to be shot dead, you know. And I can understand that one might be afraid under those circumstances, but there are an awful lot of people always in those circumstances who go, no, they're wrong, and I am.
Which is why Julian Assange is resistant. Which is why Julian Assange is such a...
And Randy, we're part of a resistance to this book.
Yeah, which is why Julian Assange is such a martyr, and has been said before, he got nothing out of it. I think that's been said by people. He was doing this for humanity. He wasn't doing this for any personal, financial benefit or anything like that. All he was doing this was for us.
You brought something up earlier, Rashid, which I want to not throw back at you, but say, yeah, please, let's talk about that more. The fact is, that at the end of the kangaroo court, the Baretsa show trial, she didn't come out with the correct interpretation of the law, which was to say, at the first 10 minutes of this trial, Assange should have been free because this is a political trial. And it's in paragraph 4, article C or whatever, of the extradition agreement between the United States and the UK, nobody can be extradited for an offence that has political connotations. So it should have been thrown out that first morning, because it wasn't, because she's a puppet. She's a puppet, and she's done it. So at the end of the day, when she should have said, he can't be extradited, it's political, or no, he can't be extradited because he's committed no crime, or no, this is bullshit. Oh, he can't be extradited because he might kill himself. What a crock of shit. Hey, if she'd actually had the balls to say he's an arch criminal and must be killed, at least the Assange team would now be appealing that decision rather than Americans appealing the fact that he can't be extradited because he's a suicide risk.
All right. Well, listen, very well said, Roger. Look, joining us right now, we have a surprise guest, and that is the father of Julian Assange, who was at the courthouse today. John, can you hear us? John,
yes,
Shipton?
I can hear you.
All right.
Hi, Randy.
And
hi.
We also have Katie Halper on the line, but we're going to go to you, John, first. And you know what? Afshin, you were there. Why don't you go ahead? I'm going to defer to you to ask John the first question.
I was only there remotely. I saw the clips.
It's good enough.
And it was obviously heartbreaking for people all around the world who could see what was going on. I mentioned earlier that at least there were some more mainstream media people on the remote, even the Guardian newspaper, bothered to tune in. What can I say, John? What did you think of seeing your son on the remote picture there, who was only there intermittently for a smaller amount of the time than the actual hearings went on, because he clearly couldn't face being there?
Couldn't really see him because he was the chair doesn't expose, where he sits doesn't expose his face much to the camera. I don't think he was much interested in being seen.
But, can you speak a bit louder?
Overall,
can't really hear you, mate.
Can you speak up a little bit louder, John?
Overall, I agree with Rogers. Position that it's a shock that the Judge Baritza's decision was flaccid and also prepared and tactically suits the Americans because, or suits the Department of Justice. All of their grounds were agreed with the exception of sending Julian to one of their dungeons, their hell holes that they have in the United States. I believe there's 80,000 prisoners in the United States in one form of solitary or another. There's only 50 in SAMS, Special Administrative Measures, which are saved for those men and women who are arrested under under espionage charges. Julian would be automatic, because the reasoning they give is that Julian or anybody under espionage charges may reveal the names or reveal more of the information that they're charged with. It's just absurd. Equally absurd was the prosecution's speaking about assurance in the United States when all of us face the fact that the United States gave us, the DOJ, the Department of Defense gave us assurances that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Well, that's one assurance that we all know is fake, and there are many more of them. What we read on the blogs nowadays is that those people, meaning the administration, not the people of the United States, the administration, are not agreement capable. So any agreement that you make with the United States is worthless. There are 9 cases that I know of where the United States has made assurances that prisoners will not be housed in this way or that way. And as soon as they arrive in the United States, that's completely ignored. So you, that was one proposition.
You must.
Go on, sorry.
I'm sorry, you got cut off there for a second, so continue talking. I didn't mean to interrupt.
The second proposition was that the chief psychiatrist for the defense, Professor Koppelman, was inadequate and shouldn't have been given weight by the judge in her judgment. The weight should have gone to the prosecution's psychiatrists. Well, that'd be sort of ridiculous, wouldn't it? And that in sum, it's sort of like this. The Julia, consequently, that Koppelman's findings are weak. And it's as absurd as that. So in both aspects of the prosecution's case, they were completely unsupportable. Tomorrow we'll have the defence's case, where those 9 cases of assurances given by the United States will be demonstrated that they're utterly valueless, and the re-examination of Koppelman's evidence will be made. Also, the prosecutor took the opportunity to attack Stella and the children. I mean, talk about piss weak. Stella, who has been, a loyal wife to Julian and a superlative mother to those children, being attacked in court is just, beyond the pale.
Complete disgrace. We're talking to John Shipton. We're talking to the father, Julian Assange. We are talking with Afshin Ratanzi of Going Underground on RT and legendary composer, activist, Roger Waters. I wanted to ask you, and Katie, I know you're on the line, but let me just ask John this. Seeing him in that courtroom, I know I've seen you there. I was there last year. And you have this phlegmatic, personality, and you're able to. I don't want to dig into your emotions, but obviously it must be difficult to watch your son going through this now over the last 10 years.
Well, if you contemplate that, of course, you sort of collapse into melancholy and depression, and you sort of confronted with resurrecting your own psychology. So I don't bother with that. What I do is I just work.
Yes.
And I attend to things as they come before me, and that keeps me out of the devilment of melancholy. I save the melancholy for after dark and a glass of wine or a nice whiskey, and then I contemplate the pains that a parent feels, or all parents feel. But I have in my mind the image of a father in Baghdad holding up his daughter, who looked to me about 6 or 7 years old, with both her feet blown off and her life blood dripping to the floor, and the horror that would be in his heart. So the suffering that the Department of Defense and the administration has brought upon the people of the Middle East is a pall of grief that hangs above the Middle East like a black cloud. And so, it's relative. I have a job to do, and I do it the best I can. And I don't indulge myself in worrying about my own feelings.
You really have worked very hard, nonstop. You're indefatigable. I remember last year I saw you there, and then here in New York, and that long home run for Julian, cross country pilgrimage that you were on. I want to go to you. And by the way, there's a film coming out that's produced by your son Gabriel called Ithaca. It will open up, I believe, in Melbourne or Sydney in November. I want to go to you, and it's you and Stella. Are featured in it. And so let me go to you, Roger, to ask John a question, if you have one.
No, I'm just sort of reeling at the depth of my admiration for John Shipton and his extraordinary eloquence. And I find myself sort of immured even in his description of his melancholy. And when he brings up the father in Baghdad or wherever with a dying child, I come a little bit close to collapse. So
Katie can liven it up a little bit here. Katie Halper is the host of the Katie Halper Show. Also, Useful Idiots with Max Taibbi, and a longtime host here at WBAI. I said Matt Taibbi. Would you welcome Katie? I'm sorry to keep you waiting for so long.
Oh, no, it's okay, of course. Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yes, well, you did spectacular the other night at the stand-ups for Julian. Why don't you kind of weigh in here? You've heard some of this conversation that's been bouncing back and forth, and if you have anything that you'd like to add, please jump in.
Sure, and I'm so sorry for what you're going through, John. My heart really goes out to you, and I'm so grateful for everyone else who's on the line now speaking truth to power and standing up for Julian Assange and also for Stephen Donziger. And it's a dark day, not surprising, sadly, but it's a dark day in history. And I think people are going to look back on this, and there's going to be a lot of shame for everyone who calls themselves a truth teller or an advocate for truth and justice and who's remained silent. And something that we need to talk about, of course, is the role of the media, the silence of the media, the complicity of the media, and how shameful it is that none of the people who should care just out of self-interest about this and about the attack on free speech and a free press, they're so silent. They're complicit in this attack on the Fourth Estate. And, you know, I'm just struck by how Trumpian the media is behaving. You know, this is a media that spent so much time for the wrong reasons, I would say. There's a lot to be angry about Trump for, but a lot of it was about the decorum and the form. And here you have an attack on the Fourth Estate, and all these people in the media who claim to care about that are silent, or they're cheering on the persecution of Julian Assange. And, you know, for those people out there who consider themselves fans of Obama, they consider themselves people who support the rule of law, and they like that Obama was this Harvard Law professor, I think they need to be asking themselves why they are taking the side of Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo. You know, as we know, whatever your thoughts on Obama were, he's someone who stopped, decided to not pursue Assange. He certainly did not do enough. He should have freed Assange. But because of this, you know, New York Times problem where you can't go after Assange, or you shouldn't be going after Assange for things that other outlets published, you know, I think that at least Obama had kind of the concern with the optics there. Now you have the Biden administration, Merrick Garland, going along with the Trumpian attack on Julian and a Trumpian attack on the Fourth Estate, and it's incredibly shameful. And I hope I'm not being naive when I encourage people to call the Department of Justice. The number there is 202-353-1555. Again, that's 202-353-1555. And I urge people to urge Merrick Garland to free Julian Assange as well as Stephen Donziger and stop these kind of twin attacks on people who dare to take on corporate power or state power. Sorry if that was the most.
No, that's fine. That was very well said. I want to ask you, John, what is your message to the American people? What can we do on this side of the ocean?
You know, the wonderful thing out of the United States that we all admire is the First Amendment. And to help us, and help, of course, the American people and people everywhere in the West, is to support and assert the right of the rights that are given under the First Amendment. Also to assert that right across corporations and government to stop this absurd censorship of people like Roger and yourself that can be removed from having a voice by a rather second-rate administration of a social media organization. These are two things that will help us and will help yourself.
Right.
Help American people, yeah.
Let me
mutual help.
Absolutely. You know, I'm disappointed, and I know you're an Australian. Is there any movement there in support that is beginning to snowball, or is it as dry as it is in this country?
Well, we've got a rising tide in Australia. There's 217 MPs divided into two houses, the State House and the Commons, and that has 30 supporting MPs. And an interesting phenomenon is that they're all cross-party, so that the original quality and beauty of the parliament begins to emerge under the influence of Julian's activists, and that is that it's cross-party, and the sovereign majesty of the parliament can feed into the parliament and ask the executive, that is, you know, the Prime Minister, etc., asked the executive to attend to the concerns of Parliament. Normally, as we all understand, Parliament is pulled to bits by the envy of all the other players and institutions, so that as an institution, it loses a lot of its authority and power. But the phenomenon under Julian's activism in Australia has reasserted some of the original charm of parliamentary governance. So that's the situation in Australia.
Well,
there's a rising tide of support.
That's really great. I see it. I feel it there. And Afshin, let me ask you, you're a keen a viewer of what's happening there on the local level. What is it, not just, politically, but on the streets, what kind of momentum do you see? Is it shifting? Is it do you see it getting any better for Julian in the UK?
Yes, we have learned. Is that me?
Afshin.
I defer to Julian's father.
Hi, Afshin.
Yeah, John, I'll share a glass of wine or whiskey with you on Thursday, hopefully, after this is over. But like Katie said, it might be naive to call the Justice Department, and Merrick Garland was testifying today. I can ask you a naive question. Any chance that he might be granted bail regardless of any decision, because they won't give a decision tomorrow, probably. And what do you think of the arguments? We haven't heard the arguments of the WikiLeaks defense team, really. We heard Edward Fitzgerald QC saying something about, I don't know, almost trying to get in the good books of judge there, saying, look, you already decided on this before on the mental health issues. Why are you, why you should be believed the first time round? Is that the strategy, given that they can't talk about media freedom because you already ruled that out? And I should also say RT came up, and a show that was done that Julian Assange made, and they were using his TV show that he did against him as well as his own children and partner.
The arguments of the prosecution were sort of empty. He's got nothing to go by, and he recycled his cross-examinations of Kopelman from the hearings back then in September. Well, that's all. He had nothing. He's got nothing. Well, the judges paid polite attention to him. I feel that because they've appointed the Chief Justice of England and Wales to the bench, and the most powerful judge in England and the UK and Wales, so this has meaning, and his decisions will be hard to appeal. So I assume that the historical or practice of supporting of lower court judges' discretionary judgment will continue, and Julian's non-extradition will be held by the court. I assume that is the if things go as they have done historically, that Julian will not be extradited. The judge will say we'll support her decision, and then the Americans may attempt to appeal. However, appealing against a decision of these Chief Justice of England and Wales will be a difficult thing. I assume also that the United Kingdom wants to get rid of this case as it's caused nothing but embarrassment, and looks as though it will continue to cause nothing but embarrassment. Edward Fitzgerald tells me that there's Article 3 that they can take to court. Also, there's the counter-appeal, which will expose all of the wretched behaviour of the FBI in Iceland and the CIA in Spain and in the Ecuadorian embassy. It will all be canvassed all over again. And I also assert that if the case went to the United States, every large media organization would have to be on the side of Julian Assange, because nobody wants the example of an espionage case against a journalist and publisher to be successful. The entire mess that they've made of their, let's start from the Swedish prosecuting authority bringing disgrace upon themselves, the Crown Prosecuting Service bringing disgrace upon itself in the conspiracy with the Swedish prosecuting authority to extend Julian's stay in the embassy for 7.5 years. I remind everybody that Julian's lawyers took the Swedish prosecuting authority to the federal court in Sweden in order to advance the case. The scandal, the deluge of misdeeds in the treatment and prosecution of Julian is endless, and it's bringing disgrace upon all of the people involved. So I assume that they've put in the Chief Justice.
Right.
Of England, put here and relieve the United Kingdom of further disgrace in this matter.
You know, John, that's true. You know, Roger and I were talking recently about, singing to the choir. I mean, Roger, do you think that's the where we go? We continue to sing to the choir to keep them motivated, or is it useless to try to use reason on people in media and those in power?
Well, I don't see that we have any alternative, frankly, because until we rise up as one and let our voices be heard and sing in harmony and make such a powerful noise that it is understood by us, by the choir, by each other, that we, the people, have the power if we choose to exercise it. Unless we do that, we might as well, I don't know, just go and drink 2 or 3 bottles of cognac and die, because the way this charade is organized is that all we can do is raise our voices. That's the only thing that we can do, and we have to hope. I think John just told us that is it only 30 members of parliament in the Australian parliament that has 217 that have joined together to be active on behalf of Julian Assange. Was I right in hearing?
Yes, that? Yes, 30.
Yeah.
30. And yes, then, 30, Roger.
Okay. Well, it ain't enough, obviously, because when I listened to this, and I was extremely interested in what John was saying and about the embarrassment of the, not just the government of the United Kingdom, but the people. I'm English. I am embarrassed. I am ashamed. I am so ashamed of my country that they've got Julian Assange banged up in their prison and that the people haven't risen up and set him free. I can't believe that it hasn't happened. And you have to keep thinking, why hasn't it happened? And because it's cut and dry. It's not as if this was a difficult thing to try. Even in the mind of an individual, you only have to look at the evidence. And to anybody with an IQ above room temperature, it's perfectly obvious that this is a completely innocent and also very valuable man.
Yes. There are people from all over the world, I should say, in answer to Randy's question, out there. I'm sure John saw them. But I mean, I suppose saying to what Roger just said, there really is a kind of media blackout about this case.
Yeah.
It really feels like that.
I mean,
it's
today
about
on
all
Twitter,
these cases.
Today on
the
Twitter,
media blackout about all of it. Right. There is no outcry. Colin Powell dies last week, and there's a few little mealy-mouthed things about, yes. Oh, what a lovely fella he was. No, he wasn't. He was an arch criminal. He sold out to the devil.
Katie?
Today on Twitter, if you search for Assange, you come up with, for some reason, the word arrested is coming up.
Right.
So it's media, it's social media. And I would just say one thing in terms of the choir. I think that we have a case of, you know, this is WBAI and this is the choir, but we have to make sure the choir is motivated and singing as loudly as possible. But also in terms of reaching out to other people, I would say there's a kind of Trump derangement syndrome. I think that's a term that's been used by the right wing, but the left needs to come up with our own term for that. But there's a case of brain worms that we see, and I think it is important to tell people who aren't already with us, and I hope people aren't too disturbed by this because this is a very unprincipled stance, and this shouldn't matter. But what Julian's being charged with has nothing to do with 2016. It has nothing to do with Trump. And a lot of people, their brains just shut off the second they think that it has anything to do with Trump or Hillary Clinton. So that's just a very important point. Again, it's not the most righteous principled point. But I think in terms of reaching people who aren't already with us, it's important to remind them of that. Also important to remind them of the fact that this undermines democracy abroad. All you have to do, if you are a dictator, you're oppressing your people in another country, and anyone tries to call you out or, highlight the fact that you're oppressing free press, all these people need to do is point to what is happening in, with England, the United States, with the participation, complacency of Australia, and they are exonerated, and they get to call, the West, rightly so, hypocrites. So that's another thing. And again, if there were any decency, if our legal system, our justice system meant anything, the fact that you had the main testimony of this case based on the key witness who we now know lied, who is a convicted sex offender, a young man who is a victim of his sexual crimes, committed suicide, and this is the star witness of a case against someone, the fact that we know the CIA talked about kidnapping and murder, and the fact that the United States isn't ashamed and isn't running away from this case and hasn't dropped it, again, people will look back on this, and it will be so embarrassing and humiliating, and people need to be reaching out to other people. They need to be talking out and speaking out, because we cannot let this happen. It is such a travesty.
Well, we're going to keep doing what we all do. We have like 5 minutes left. I'm going to go to you, Afshin. We just heard from Katie and from Roger. Give us a conclusionary peration here before John takes it home.
Yeah, it's so important. I suppose what Katie said about the fact that. The U.S. public is so duped by all this Trump stuff that they think it's somehow connected to Trump and these different issues, when, of course, this is free speech. And it should be said that given the United Nations claims that he has been tortured by British and American authorities, it means, in effect, that whistleblowers for torture anywhere in the world who go to the U.N., Britain and the United States will connive with them, let alone, of course, the revelations about attempts for gun battles in the central London to maybe kill Julian Assange. So the number of precedents here for what may happen if the worst happens is appalling for all mass media, for torture, for the authorities. I know Roger mentioned the Prime Minister here, Boris Johnson. He was a former journalist, and it certainly does show so far the British authorities are yet again proving that this country is an aircraft carrier of the United States. There seems to be, according to Judge Bareta's decision, nothing about free speech in this case. It was as if it had come straight from Mike Pompeo and the CIA. So if this case goes the wrong way, that is the end of all free speech.
Yeah.
I know lots of people have said there hasn't been for long enough. But this is the end.
At least the semblance of democracy. John Pilger said it's the end of democracy. John Shipton, you have the final words here. So what do you have to say about it to the public?
Kind of you, Randy. I'd just like to thank Roger and Hapson, who, for some reason or other, in a mysterious way, we've all become firm friends, although we've only actually known each other briefly at events. I see that Roger married again the other day, and I was quite moved and felt good for him. And Afshin, I've been on his show a couple of times, but I follow Afshin on WhatsApp and we occasionally chat. And Randy, similarly, I have shared broken bread with you and had a glass of wine up there in the Catskills. So I feel the same bond with all of the people across the United States, United Kingdom, and Europe and Australia who have joined us in this march, in this noble task to bring freedom to Julian Assange and to return their institutions of state to decent behavior under the auspices within law. And those great civil artifacts that were brought into being after the horrors of the war in 1945, the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Conventions of Asylum ratified under the authorship of Australia, of all places, in 1973 in the UNGA, in the United Nations General Assembly, reassert those values and emerge once again and see the stars.
Well, that was very well said. I want to thank all four of you, Katie Halper of the Katie Halper Show and the Useful Idiots, Roger Waters, always wonderful. Great to hear from you again. And Afshin Ratanzi, you'll keep us posted. I know you'll be monitoring this tomorrow, and maybe we'll be doing this again soon. Hopefully it will be on a very good note. John Shipton, my love goes to you and both your kids. And we're going to take a quick break here. Thank you all for being part of this special edition of Live with the Fly. And we'll be right back after this. This is a piece by Niels Melzer. It's not by Niels Melzer. It's by Ludwig Beethoven. It's his version of Moonlight Sonata. We'll be right back with Lorcan Otway, attorney Lorcan Otway and the famous nightclub owner where we did the show last Sunday. I'm Randy Credico, Live on the Fly. We'll be right back. Thank you all for joining us. That was UN Rapporteur on Torture, Niels Melzer, who, as an avocation, he plays classical piano. He has provided us with some of his original music. I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico, Live on the Fly, here on 99.5 FM in New York City. If you want to hear shows like this, folks, if you want to hear the kind of stuff that only BAI provides in this, maybe in this country, along with the Pacifica Network, please support the station. Go to givetowbai.org. And I believe that you can still get In Defense of Assange for a $50 donation to the station. And that's at 212-209-2950. And it's signed by co-editor Margaret Ratner Kunstler. We are joined now by Lorcan Otway, who's been patiently sitting out in the green room. listening to the show, Lorcan is the owner of the wonderful, my favorite place, really, to perform. It's such a it's a jewel box, as they say. It's called, and I guess it's an off-Broadway or off-Broadway showroom called Theater 80 St. Mark's. We had a great show the other day, stand-ups for Assange, with some of the guests I just had on, and Lee Camp and Margaret Ratner Kunstler, and I just want to mention Bernadette and Bernadette Evangelist, and my good friend also Chuck Slatkin, who were major supporters and organizers of this event. I want to thank Nathan Fuller and my engineer and co-editor or co-producer on my show Countdown to Freedom, and that is Kelly Lane. So Lorcan, the club. What did you think of the show the other day?
Oh, first of all, I thought
get closer to the mic.
I thought the show was absolutely spectacular. It was a historic evening. You know, we've had historic evenings back to 1933 and before that. The history isn't told because we were a speakeasy, but everything from Mingus and John Coltrane recording live at the Jazz Gallery to events we had where Patti Smith did a concert for the victims of the Second Avenue explosion. But before I talk about the problems at Theater 80, I want to just give one moment of history so people know why we do what we do.
Both.
Yeah, our motto under my leadership has been to mainstream the margins. So that, for example, as you were just speaking about playing to the choir, we have everything from classical plays to events that have frightened groups like the Religious Society of Friends. We did an event at the Quaker Meeting House. I'm a generational Quaker. For Lynn Stewart, and the next day at a business meeting, I was asked why I brought communists into the meeting house. Well, it was New Year's Eve a number of years ago, and we had just toasted the new year, and my phone rang, and it was Ralph Pointer telling me that he was on his way to picking up Lynn. Lynn Stewart, this is an audience I don't have to explain who that was. And I announced it to the bar, and a cheer went up, and the diversity of the crowd there, from the society crowd from Lexington Avenue and Park Avenue, the old dowagers from Fifth Avenue, and the Lower East Siders and East Villagers who are from the anarchist to the art community. And the reason that happened was because having events for Lynn Stewart at our theater, mainstream the margins. People who were only getting the story from shows like, what was that fictionalized account, Law and Order, who thought that she was a terrorist in the courtroom, were getting to hear it from the people that did not have other places to speak to that crowd of wealthy individuals. And today what happened was, over the past year and a half, our debt has been purchased. We were told we could not do business for a year and a half, and rightly so. There was a dangerous pandemic on, but we were not protected from a company buying our debt.
We have 1 minute left here.
And they increased our interest rates to 24%. We're losing over $4,000 a day. We're well over $1 million above what we would have been paying back had we maintained a 10% loan. So what we need is legal work from volunteer lawyers. If someone has a big multinational corporation and listens to BAI and wants to lease the naming rights in our building, we would welcome that happening quickly. We literally have 3 weeks to save Theater 80. And
we're going to have to get you back on next week to talk about it a little more. I'm sorry we had that show that ran a little long. Not long.
This was a special show.
And I want to thank you for your generosity in giving us the theater the other day. It was really quite an experience. to provide that free of charge to us. And I urge people, anyone out there that can support Theater 80 St. Mark's, please email me, creditco2014@gmail.com, and I'll send it over, you know mine, and I'll send it over to Lorcan. We're going to get you back on as this goes, and you can tell us what you need.
I appreciate that, Rob.
All right, so I think we're just out of time. This is we're going to play a few seconds here of Roger Waters here. This is him singing The Bar, which he played the other day. Here's an excerpt of it. Sorry.
Everybody in the ball.